BBC Radio Leicester.
This week on Doctor Who.
Good morning, class. Are we sitting comfortably?
The Time Lord goes back to school.
I'm expecting my guest, Mick Mason. I wonder if that is him. Hang on a moment. Let me just open the door. Is it Mick?
Yeah, hello, hello. John.
Morning. Go on, make yourself at home. Recline upon the ottoman. Very nice to see you. You are really a local lad, aren't you?
Yeah, just up the road on the Groby Road in the Newfound Pool.
I won't be so ungallant as to ask how many years ago it was that you were born.
Quite a few, yeah.
Let me just explain how we came to invite you in on the programme. It was my old friend Tony Wadsworth, who was looking at your website and was in raptures about the stories that he found on there and the interesting content, and said, this chap looks like someone who you get on well with. So ever willing to accept my good friend's advice, Mick, we invited you in. But you have got a very comprehensive website. When did that start?
Started about 2 years ago, although I'd been thinking of it for a year before, and it was just an information one, and I just felt it needed a bit of personality in it and lightening up. So I'd given a talk when I was at the old Hillcrest Hospital, and somebody suggested writing a book. So that was really the start of it. I added a few personal things, which turned out to be more on the humorous side as well.
Sort of things about your family, bits of autobiography, stories about your life.
Yes, yeah, and I think it was the idea was to show what it was like before I had a serious operation, and what life's been since the operation.
Well, that's another great theme, isn't it? Your life before and after cancer.
Yeah.
Just take us through that, if you will.
Well, I had, in 1999, after I lose track of the time, really, but I had a planned operation to remove all my colon to prevent cancer, bowel cancer, and it was only on 10 days later when they actually found out it was already cancerous, and they mentioned the genetic side of it.
Just explain about that.
Yeah, that it's luckily it's rare. It's called FAP. It's familiar these words that you have a job pronouncing, and adenomatous polyposis. But lots of in layman's terms, really, it's a gene that lets bumps and lumps grow.
Gardner syndrome.
Yeah, that was. I had lots of cysts from when I was young. My mother actually said a lump on my head was when I fell out of the cot and broke a tile, and being a cider drinker, it was because it was all the pips and the apples growing, and then I didn't eat greens, so it was because of the not eating vegetables.
But it wasn't any of that.
No, as it turned out, and as I found out, there was a reason.
And that reason must have hit you as a bit of a, well, it come as a shock to you.
It did at the time, although Anne and my wife and myself were half expecting it in a way. I'd had trouble for 30 years and been kept under observation, and I don't know who was more astounded, my surgeon or Anne and myself. It was a blow, but they said, you know, well, it's caught early, and that was the good news.
And you went into hospital. You did, as you say, have a major operation. You must have been rather concerned about that.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a cocoon, you know, I couldn't really care less, but the one thing I'll always remember, it was the chess finals night for the primary schools, and I'd run the primary school's chess for about 18 years, and it was the first finals night I'd missed, and it was nice to get a lot of cards from the children afterwards.
Well, that was very nice, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like giving you a thank you in a way, and it was nice to know that they were thinking of me as well, even though I wasn't there.
And has the fact that you lived through that, has it changed the way you look at things?
Oh, yes, I think quite dramatically. I've always been a humorous type, and still am. But as I say, I don't like phrases, but suffer fools gladly. I do sometimes think, what have people got to worry about over something minor, where there's such more traumatic things in everybody's life? But I look out and I take each day as it goes, and and just do what I feel like doing.
Seems like a very sensible way to look at the world.
Well, I hope so, yes.
I'm going to ask you in a moment about some of the things on your website. In particular, I got very intrigued by your stories of church choirs. I will ask you about that, but before that, we've asked you to choose three pieces of music. First of all, you've selected the Mamas and the Papas, dedicated to the one I love. Now, why have you chosen that?
Well, that's really for Anne, my wife. When I was in hospital, the phone hardly ever stopped, and afterwards, when I came out, it was all about me. People, how are you? How are you doing? And I seemed to forget Anne. I just feel people sometimes who have had any kind of illness, they become the centre of attention, and it's for Anne and for everybody else, really, in the same position.
Here's the Mamas and the Papas. Dedicated to the one I love, and that was chosen by Mick Mason to thank Anne, his wife, for all her help down the years, in particular in helping him to overcome cancer when he was in hospital. We'll be continuing to talk to Mick in a moment, but we've got, you'd like to nominate a fit on your website. There are, well, all sorts of things, but the thing that caught my eye, it was about church choirs, and this kind of immediately wafted me back to another era, really. Let's establish, first of all, we're talking about St. Augustine's, aren't we?
Yes, on the Foss Road.
Yeah.
Yeah. I joined when I was about seven, and all my family was there. And really, it was because I enjoyed singing, not so much the religious side.
So you queued up and joined the choir? Then?
Yeah, joined up the choir and the Cubs and the Scouts and enjoyed it. You know, it was great fun.
Now, what then happened, of course, was that, well, you can only really call it choir wars broke out.
Yeah.
Just explain what happened.
Well, it sounds strange now, but 50 years ago, it must have been stranger. I think it was because the vicar and the the choir master or the organist had a disagreement about the type of hymns and the type of service. I think one of them wanted to upgrade, if you like, to a higher level of service, and the other one didn't think so and wouldn't give way. And he actually sacked the whole choir.
He sacked the whole choir?
Sacked the whole lot of us, yeah.
And what happened then?
Well, you know, I was about 10, I should think, but I was at Alderman Richard Hallam, or Dickie Hallam, as we called it, up the Anstey Lane, and a choir master from St. Leonard's came round looking for choir boys, and it seemed a natural thing to go down to St. Leonard's. I actually lived in the parish of St. Leonard's, so, you know, it wasn't as if I'd defected or anything, I'd just changed sides.
What happened to your fellow choristers?
I don't know, really. I'm not sure how much later on, but he reinstated the choir, and my father was a church warden at St. Augustine's, and I know there was a heated discussion with the vicar about whether I should go back to St. Augustine's or would I be allowed to stay at St. Leonard's.
I love this heated discussion. Those are the days when you had heated discussions about the choirs. But it sounds from what you write about life in the choir that you weren't all angels by any means, were you?
No, I think we'd been sent to Australia if it had been 50 years before. But, we used to throw the hassocks around before choir practice. Philip Harrison, who was my best man eventually, he was a talented piano player and used to play light music on the organ and before the choir master came in. And there was a back room where the empty communion bottles were kept, and we used to drain them into one, and we got a sniff of it, you know, and we thought we were, you know, out of this world almost.
And did you sort of read comics when you should have been reading your music?
Well, not so much, but we used to put our own words to some of the hymns and, you know, and pretend that we got one over the choir master. But he was a good chap, and I think he turned a blind eye.
What do you mean, like while shepherds washed their socks by night and seated on the ground? Yes.
Yeah, several like that.
Some of them are not repeatable,
no.
I dare say. But the church was important, perhaps more important to people then than it is now. And to live in the parish and to participate in the life of the parish, that was quite important, wasn't it?
Yes, at St. Augustine's, you know, I was with my family at the church, and moving to St. Leonard's, there was none of my family, and I probably made more friends there than at St. Leonard's, and it was only when joining the Air Force that, you know, I lost touch with those.
Did you, as a choir, go around singing at Christmas? I mean, did you go carol singing around the streets?
Yeah, that was tremendous, that was. Yeah. I can't remember much at St. Augustine's, but at St. Leonard's it was all round Woodgate and up to the Groby Road Hospital, the Blackbird Inn, and mince pies and cakes at different houses. Yeah, it was a great time, you know, and
there's something like being out after dark in that cold air.
No, that's right.
And having the license to knock on people's doors and things.
Yeah, you felt it was a different world almost, you know, more like a Christmas card, some of them.
We're going to play another piece of music. This is nothing to do with Christmas cards or Christmas carols. This is, it's the Wurzels, actually. Are you a cider drinker?
Well, yeah, since I was about 14, my cousins were on holiday at Munsley on the East Coast, and they said, oh, have a drink of cider, it won't do you any harm. And it's the only drink I drink. I've become quite well known for carrying flagons of cider in briefcases for chess matches.
Well, come on to chess in a moment, because that's obviously another great passion of yours.
Yes, yeah. I played chess as a 11-year-old at Ellis Avenue, and I finished playing for about 12 years at one stage, and then came back and learnt to enjoy it again, and got involved, as I said, with the primary schools.
Chess in a moment, drinking cider now.
Shed, and we're rolling in the hay. All the cows. so cozy in the kitchen with the smell of rabbit stew. When the breeze blows across the farmyard, you can smell the cowshed too.
Oh, I never smelled nothing like it all my life.
When those combine wheels stops turning and the hard day's work is done, there's a pub around the corner. It's the place we have our fun. Takes a stroll down Lover's Lane, and we'll sink a pint of scrumpy, then we'll play all nature's game. But we end up in the duck pond when the pub decides to close, with me britches full of chat balls and the news between me toes.
That I am a cider drinker, and I guarantee for the rest of the day you'll be going round interspersing your speech with the mystic words oo-ar, oo-ar. I can guarantee that. That was the choice of my guest, Mick Mason. Back to him in a moment. In the studio is Mick Mason, the possessor, the creator of a rather fine and very comprehensive website. Actually, before we pass on to other things, it ought to be said, I suppose, that the two churches, Mick, that you've mentioned, very sadly, are no more, are they?
No, and for different reasons. I think when all the houses around Woodgate were demolished or towards the park, you know, it was no surprise that they shut the church down. But to actually knock down such a magnificent building, I think, was a bit of sacrilege. But I could never understand St. Augustine's closing, because all the houses are still there. Mm. But it was a sad day when it got...
Well, it burnt down.
Burnt down, to put it bluntly, yeah.
But it was going to be converted for other use, wasn't
it? Yeah, half of it had already gone in a way. I mean, I think when my father's funeral, half of it was used as more like, not offices, but there was only half of the church actually used as a church. And then, as you say, then it shut down.
All right, you've moved on. Let's move on a little bit from boyhood now, and... You did national service?
Yes, yeah, I volunteered to go into the Air Force when I was 18, and after 2 years at Hillcrest.
And how did you enjoy that? I mean, a number of folk talk about doing national service. Some say they hated every minute of it. Others say, oh, well, it wasn't as bad as people make out.
Yeah, I think when I came out, I said, well, it wasn't as good as when I went in, you know, and there was times when I tried to buy myself out, But overall, it was a good life, and we got around the world a bit, and I think it gave you that bit of respect for people as well.
You have mentioned your love of chess. Did that continue through the time when you were doing your national service?
Yeah, well, I'd finished playing just before I went into the RAF, and it was only almost been 8 years later when I was in the Persian Gulf. They had a games evening. And they needed somebody from the hut we were in of 15 people to play chess. So I played chess and got the love of it back with the Women's Voluntary Service.
Are you sure it was the chess that
I think so, yeah. Mind you, it was nice to see a lady in a skirt, you know, after after 12 months out there.
How good are you at it?
Not very good now. Potentially, I think, I had friends who were county champions and all sorts at school. But I did make the highlights of the county third team, and which was more of a social team, really, and sometimes wondered if it's because I drove a car.
You still play?
No, I've just given up. I found the time to spend 2 hours concentrating was too much, and relying on, perhaps the team relying on you for half a point after 2 hours, and after half an hour you couldn't really care less. It wasn't fair.
Are you the kind of chess player that reads books about famous games?
When I was a youngster, yes, but not since. I just play it as it goes along and enjoy it, you know, try things, and if they don't work, they don't work.
Because I suppose the good player's got to be thinking 3-4 steps ahead,
it can overtake your life. I mean, it nearly did at one time. I was playing playing chess probably on about 20 Saturdays a year and twice in the week.
Is it still popular these days? Is it still thriving?
Not quite so much, but I think the computers have taken over. You know, it's easier to sit at a computer and play a world champion, if you like. You know, not for me.
Not for you, all right. Well, we come back in a sense to where we started from, and that's, on your website, you talk about your cancer and going into hospital and being different, this side of it, as it were. What do you do now? What is it that keeps you amused and entertained? What gets you through the day?
I've got, on the website, there's my travel companion called Jimby. He's a Rustberry monkey, and I've used him to kind of put over the journeys I do. I do a lot of work for Macmillan and Cancer Backup now on the genetic side, and travel around the country, and he lightens it up. But it's like having a little job. It's just raising awareness.
So you go around and talk to people about it?
Yes, I'm on a couple of committees with Macmillan, who are looking at putting genetic services into the local surgeries. I mean, I had to wait months for a genetic appointment at Leicester, and it's just a way of making it easier for people, if they've got a concern, just to be able to pop in the local surgery and have a chat. But whether it'll continue after the project's finished, it's the great unknown.
Well, it's great talking to you.
Well, thank you, John.
It's nice to hear just one or two of the stories. But I think the best thing is if you give us the address of your website, then folk are going to have a look at these wonderful stories for themselves.
Yeah, it's www.fapgene, that's G-E-N-E, .org.uk.
That's all the W's, .fapgene, F-A-P-G-E-N-E, .org.uk. So we're going to finish with just a snatch, a part of the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Oratorio of Messiah. Why?
There's a lot of somber times in church music, and it was always nice to, if you like, brush off the cobwebs and give it a good rousing sing, and that's one of the things. And also, Mrs. Burton, who was an old lady at St. Augustine's, she used to laugh every time we sang Hallelujah, and it's perhaps in memory of her as well.
Why did she laugh?
She just said it was my face whenever I sang Hallelujah. She said it, whether it was the cherubim side of me coming out, I don't know. But it got to the stage where I'd hardly ever sing the word Hallelujah, and we'd just be laughing at each other.
Well, Mick, as I said, a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. And here is part of the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah. Let's see if you grin at this. of the Hallelujah Chorus from Handel's Messiah in a wildly reorchestrated version. I think they probably threw in everything but the kitchen sink there, and that was recorded in 1959. Sir Thomas Beecham, who was known to do that kind of thing, and the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, as I say, part of Handel's Messiah, as requested by my guest this afternoon, and that's Mick Mason.